Blog Talk Radio. Welcome to Mindshifters Radio with your co-host, the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice, and his wife, Jeannie. Michael and Jeannie share with you the wisdom of the ancient Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. They offer tools and support 5 days a week. They will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love, in Aramaic, Rachma. Michael is the author of Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information on Michael and Jeannie, please visit www.whyagain.com. And now your co-host, the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael and Jeannie Rice.
To the brightness within you and the truth that is rooted within me.
Hi, and welcome to Mindshifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. I'm Jeannie Rice, your co-host, and we also have Dr. Tim Hayes with us, and we welcome you to the show. Today is Monday, August the 10th, 2015, and our call-in number is 646-200-4169. Press 1, and that puts you in queue to talk to us, and we would love to hear your comments and your questions, because then that makes this your show. Welcome, Michael. Hello, Michael. Okay, well, we're in two different locations, so I'm not sure he is on, but he's in one place picking up an air conditioner for one of our chillers at Heartland, and I'm in another location with Wi-Fi, so I will talk until he gets on there. If you're not familiar with our show, Mindshifters Radio is about shifting your mind, about getting back to being who you were designed to be. I think I hear Yay. Michael now. Yay. Hi. Welcome.
I'm actually out in the bright sun. We got this gorgeous, sunny, blue sky day with a few white clouds. And I was out in the sun. I couldn't see my screen to get to find the mute button on this new phone. So anyway, but I made it, and I'm here, and I'm delighted, and I'm honored that you're with us, and that we have this opportunity to share the space and enter the discussion of first century Aramaic forgiveness. The tool with which, if you know how to use it and you put it to work in your life, you will literally remove from your structure the very capacity for any form of hostility or fear. It's just that simple, that straightforward, is that definable. If you enter into the process of forgiveness, now, nobody's saying that it's going to happen overnight. Nobody's saying that it's going to be easy. It's actually very simple, but it can be a very challenging proposition to actually take responsibility for everything that you hold in your mind and to learn to remove it. We live in a culture that teaches us to think in terms opposite to what's going on inside of me belongs to me. Our culture teaches us that what goes on inside of me is caused by you. The only reason I'm feeling this is because you said, you did, this is all your fault, and if only you'd change. And most people just get locked and stuck in their story. And their story is about how everybody else is the problem in their lives. And in their stories, what happens is they follow the dynamic of their power person. And we've talked about and introduced, and you can't hear this piece too often, the whole concept of a power person. And a power person is the person in your life who had more control over your life than you did at some stage or some phase, and they were not functioning as love. If they were not functioning as love, then they entered into dynamics that had been passed on to them by their power person. And so we end up with these generational patterns that just go on and on and on. And basically, the simple lowdown of the power person dynamic is that depending what level of stress one is under, if one is not aware that they carry a power person dynamic, has not gone in to forgive the dynamics of the power person, then every time, not sometimes, but every time, the power person dynamic will kick in. And when one has very little stress, what they will tend to do automatically, there's a thing in the mind called the automatic decision system. The mind will automatically instruct you to do whatever you did to get along with your power person. It'll prompt you into that state. When stress starts to build, the tendency will be to move to the next level of the power person dynamic, and that is to do whatever it was that you did to resist and survive the power person. And then, when one becomes ultra-stressed, they'll do whatever they did that your power person did to them that they hate. Just as definable as Mike Ball's thing. If you watch somebody under stress, you can feel very comfortable turning to them, describing their behavior precisely. You know, if their power person, when they were in there upset, manipulated them, then along will come manipulation. If the power person degraded them, then stress is up and the chips are down, you'll hear degrading words come out of somebody's mouth. They'll start telling you what's wrong with you and why you should have and why you're manipulating and why you're this and why you're that. And it'll all simply be because in the mind, the unresolved dynamic of the power person leads one to play out whatever the power person did. It's just, you know, like night follows day. And so if you study well your power person dynamic and come to understand it, when one becomes ultra-stressed, study what that is, what that looked like. You know, really, in detail, write down, what did my power person do that I just hated when they did it? What kind of words did they use? What kind of manipulators did they use? What kind of energy were they in? And then just notice when the stress is up and the chips are down, your mind will kick in and it will do exactly the same thing. However, there's one little thing to be understood. When the mind kicks in and does the same thing, it won't tell you that it's doing the same thing. For instance, a person who, let's say they had a power person who was always needing to run their lives and run their lives with manipulation, you know, telling them what to do. But they did it in a nice way. They didn't actually tell them they couldn't run their lives. They'll say things like, you know, if I were doing that, here's what I do. And they'll put that dynamic into the space. And so here's somebody 10, 20, 30, 50, 70 years later, and the stress is up and the chips are down. They'll be telling you how they do it. And then if it was manipulation or degradation, then they'll do the same put down that was done by the power person. And it doesn't matter who the object of attention is. What happens is the mind structures this reality. You know, we've repeated often the CIA research on perception that confirms what we've been teaching for decades. And that is that perception is a construct of the mind. And when we construct our reality out of the brain cells that we acquired through interaction with our power person, we'll build a picture of a person that we're looking at that we think is actually that person out there, but the structure we're looking at is a picture in our minds. And built out of, if the stress is up and the chips are down, the power person dynamic will kick in, and built out of that same energy, the behaviors will come, and one will think they're actually talking to the person standing in front of them, as opposed to talking out of a picture in their minds based on their power person dynamic. Once you study and understand your power person dynamic and you find yourself under stress, then you have enough awareness to say, oh, I think I'll put a hold on this. I think I'll stop this. And as I stop this, I get to drop into the part of my mind through forgiveness that holds that dynamic, and I get to resolve that painful situation with my power person. Once I do that, I will not do that to another person again. Once I actually am able to forgive that dynamic in myself, I'll be freed of it, they'll be freed of it, and we get to play a whole different game. But just watch what your power person does under stress, and then observe yourself. Except that there'll be one difference. And the one difference is, let's say for the person who's the situation that I just described, you know, been told over and over, you can't do it. I have to tell you how to run your life, only I'll do it nicely by implying that you don't know how, so I'll tell you how I would do it. You know, I'll show you how I would do it, and then you'll understand. The implied put down is that you're not smart enough, you're not bright enough to run your own life. And so what will happen is, when one plays out that power person dynamic, is their mind will not tell them accurately what it is that they're doing. The mind will tell them that they're doing something totally and completely different. For instance, the mind will kick into, let's say the mind will say, well, I'm not trying to run their lives. I'm not degrading them when I say they're out of integrity. No. I'm trying to help. So the 9-bit mind shows the reality of the person playing a power person dynamic, doing exactly the same behaviors, but when it was done to them, they called it, well, that's just rotten. That's manipulation. Look what you're doing to me. But then, you know, decades later, when the mind plays that, it's like, well, I'm just trying to be helpful. And so it will not, the mind will not reveal that it's playing the power person dynamic out. So it takes a deep study of that power person dynamic. And when a person first starts to really look at it, they will swear that they have never done and would never do whatever that is. They just absolutely wouldn't do that. And their whole lives, when the stress is up and the chips are down, that's exactly what they do. And so it's just a piece of work to do. It's a major and important piece of work, because that dynamic is the dynamic that makes the world go round. I don't care if it's in business and your boss is stressed, your boss plays out his power person dynamic. It's in business and you're stressed in the office, you'll play out your power person dynamic. And the way that you can tell, you know, the tendency is to have more than one power person. But the way you can tell who your key power person is when the stress is up and the chips are down, whose behavior do you do? So let's say, you know, dad might have been a power person, mom might have been, big sister and big brother might have all been power persons in your life. So in a certain situation, you know, the power person that's governing the mind might be dad. That'll be the behavior. In another situation, the person might be mom. In still another, it might be big sister, big brother, whoever. It just goes on and on and on until we recognize, oh, this is a power person dynamic. Here I am functioning out of those feelings. There's another way you can tell that this is the dynamic that's happening, is you'll be feeling toward the picture that you construct in your mind the way you felt when your power person did that to you. Because it's all coming out of the same energetic dynamic. And so if I recognize that, you know, when I was around my power person, I always had this thought and this, like, it felt just kind of like gravelly and like I was being put down. It's the thought that went with it. So here I am in a situation, and if I'm feeling gravelly and like I'm being put down, that's a signal. Oh, I'm right back. This situation, this circumstance has elicited my power person dynamic, and if I can stop and stop telling my story and stop talking about it, and it's always interesting because there are a million stories in the naked city. Once the power person dynamic kicks in, the mind will have a whole story about what it's about. You know, this whole situation's about you. And then, you know, you give somebody a new piece of information, and all of a sudden, the mind forgets that it said the situation was all about you, and the focus shifts to another person. Oh, well, no, wait a minute. I got a whole other story. It's about you. And then when that one's made illogical, and people will make up the words they never heard to justify that story, the mind will just play out story after story, and it's totally oblivious to the fact that it started out with one story and that was the truth, and then when that one fell apart, it was about this story and that one was true, and the mind's got a million stories. So when we start forgiving, we collapse and let go of our stories and start to live just a different world than that world based in hostility or fear. But if feelings you had with your power person are what surface, then that's what you're going to play out, is that particular dynamic. So that's what we're here to support the healing of and to move forward in a whole new way, and that is that when the stress is up and the chips are down, I call on my relationship with love to determine what my behavior is going to be. I actually have a space in my mind where I can listen to the mind and the words of love. Now, remember, there's some Harvard research we've talked about that says that in a time frame where 10,000 brain cells fire, the max amount of information that goes into awareness is 9 bits. So if my 9-bit mind is filled with my story, there's no room for love to tell me a different story. There's no room for love to come in and bring me healing. And so when I'm willing to turn, really, truly turn to love, I got to recognize that that's the dynamic I'm stuck in. And as I learn to dissolve it, as I learn to forgive it, and if you're not familiar with the forgiveness tool, it's freely available on our website, www.whyagain.org, and you're certainly welcome to jump on the website. And in the middle of the page, there's a red bullseye. You might have to scroll down a little bit, but if you hit the bullseye, it'll open a whole series of links, and those links will show you exactly how to entertain and how to enter into the forgiveness process and learn to dissolve all of the dynamics of hostility and fear within your structure. Remember, your mind is never justified being in hostility or fear about what's outside of you, because hostility and fear reduce your intelligence and stick you in a power person dynamic, which means that the tendency will be to just recycle and recycle and recycle that in those relationships. And so different situations will tend to bring up different power person issues. You know, if I'm in the office and, you know, I'm with the guys and my big brother used to beat up on me all the time, I'll tend to play the power person dynamic out of being beat up on and how I responded to my big brother. If I'm with an authority and I had a power person that was mom or dad or both, then in the presence of authority, I'll tend to play out mom and dad's power person dynamic. So as you start to observe your mind and you catch it at its game, you get to change its game, and it just becomes a different game. So we're here to support you. Click that bullseye, a whole series of links open, and that will walk you right through the forgiveness process, including give you at least 16 now radio shows where there's been a full hour of discussion. And people will often say, well, I don't know how to do that worksheet process, okay? So there's 16 hours, free MP3 downloads. You just double-click on them, and you can listen to them, or you can right-click and save them to your computer, put them on your iPhone or your Android phone or whatever, and listen to them anytime. And each one is a full set of instructions. We've walked somebody through the whole worksheet process, and, of course, each person in their uniqueness has different questions, different issues, different ideas, and so you get just a fabulous 16-hour review of the whole forgiveness process. And it is the core tool that comes out of the first century Aramaic language for changing the dynamics of the mind from that of hostility, fear, replaying power person dynamics, into where when the stress is up and the chips are down, we're willing to really, truly, actually turn to the mind of love. To really, truly trust love. That's when you know you're entering relationship with the Creator. When the stress is up and the chips are down, you stop, take a breath, and you actually tap into the presence of love in you. And you trust the advice that that mind gives you. Everything changes when you go there. We're here to support you going there. That's what our work is all about, and we're delighted and honored that you're here to share with us. And Jeannie, you said Dr. Tim is here. Let's say hello to Dr. Tim and see how his weekend went.
I'm here. I'm doing well.
Awesome. How do you be, sir?
I'm doing quite well, thank you. And
good.
Enjoying the intro and thinking about the power person dynamics and the over the weekend I was listening again to some of the way of mastery. And one of the things that comes to my awareness as I listen to it over and over is how, without saying it quite this way, they keep talking about how whenever you're not feeling calm and loving, whenever you're not connected to the Christ mind, that's your signal to make a course correction.
Yes.
Anytime I have any kind of one line in there is, any level of negative reactivity indicates a need for forgiveness. And the
yes.
forgiveness that they talk about is very much what you're talking about. Recognizing that nothing negative ever happened to me in the first place. This other person is another spark from the divine mind, and that there's nothing that can be taken from me or added to me of any value. So there isn't the agreement that somebody did something wrong and then I forgive them. It's undoing a false perception in my own mind. And so whenever I have a negative reaction of any kind, that indicates the need to undo a false perception in my mind. So that's what was resonating for me as I was listening to lots of different lessons from the Way of Mastery over the weekend, and what was coming
cool.
to mind as you were talking.
Well, it's interesting. There's a you trigger the remembering of one of the tests in A Course in Miracles to determine whether you've completed your work. You know, the non-being mind will generally tell us we're further ahead than we are, but there's a really tough test in the Course about determining where you're really at with your process, and that is, if you think of another person, are you at perfect peace? That's the first half of the test. That's the easy part. The second half of the test is, when they think of you, do they share your perfect peace? That takes it to a whole other level, when you realize that ultimately we're connected with everyone and people are resonating and showing us the parts of us we haven't healed. And yeah, we can go into our snit and our story, fill our 9-bit mind with pictures of everybody else that reflect the pain that's inside of us, or we can collapse that picture through forgiveness. And that's the core of course, what forgiveness does is it collapses what's fabricated by the conscious mind and empowers us to drop into the unconscious dynamic and bring love to it and bring healing. So it's like, I always have to laugh when I think of that one. Do they share my perfect peace? Is there anybody out there who doesn't share perfect peace with you? Then you've got work to do. I've got work to do. I don't know anybody that's finished that test. So it's definitely a stringent test.
Yeah,
so anything exciting in the way of patterns you're seeing today, or anything in particular to share with us?
Well, the only thing in patterns today is the idea of identifying with, and strongly identifying with goals and possessions. And so it's a difficult task for me as a therapist in this culture, which is so focused on physical possessions and accomplishments and labels and accomplishing certain goals, to try and get people to understand that without exception, the upset they're feeling that they're coming in to me asking me to help them with is literally being caused by their identification with things and labels and goals. So that's the pattern for today. I get a lot of pushback at times when I suggest people move out of the identification with lots and lots of different things.
I hear that one loud and clear. And the invitation to look, the time to be looking is when we're in a more centered and connected place, because when the stress is up and the chips are down, it's really hard to see through those unconscious blasts from the unconscious. You know, it's really tough to see through them. But a signal, you know, where I can start to see what my mind is doing is just to look at the energy that I have behind, you know, in that power person dynamic I was just talking about, what's the energy I have behind it? And am I willing to look and see if that's really truly based in love, or is that based in my hostility, fear, manipulative power person dynamic? And if it is, when I'm ready to tell somebody else how they should be doing it, I might be wanting to look at, well, how well am I doing at running my own life that I should be running someone else's and telling someone else how it should be? So it's always an interesting process, an interesting game. And it's interesting also how many people want to be told how to do their lives. They want somebody to tell them. They come. I'm sure, Tim, you've had it happen, and I have it happen all the time where somebody, well, just tell me what to do. It's like, I can't tell you what to do. I can support you getting to a clear mind so you have your own guidance as to what to do. But other than do a worksheet or pick up a tool, you know, I can't suggest to someone you enter this relationship or you don't, you take this job or you don't. But many people, because they're used to being run by the authorities in their lives, that's where they live. Well, just tell me what to do. Have you ever seen that one happen in your practice?
Yeah, on a pretty regular basis. And yeah, it gets very tense at times because people get very frustrated. And they think I'm simply holding out on them. You know, they don't understand that it isn't about me holding out. It's about I don't have the answers for them. And if I provided them with an answer, it wouldn't be right.
And, of course, many people provide answers to the people around them as though they know how to run someone else's life better than the person themselves does. It's just, you know, You just can't go there. It just doesn't work. I mean, people do go there, but it's never going to work to produce a life free from hostility and fear to think, I know how to run somebody else's life better than I do. So it's an interesting dynamic, for sure. Let's check with Jeannie and see if she's got any callers for us. Jeannie, is there anything happening in the...
Michael?
Yes.
Hi, it's Michelle.
Hey, young lady, welcome.
Hi. Actually, we have a caller with a hand up if you'd like to take that.
Let's go for it. I didn't know you were on the switchboard. Welcome. Thank you.
Thanks. Area code 847, you're on the air. Who do we have and where are you calling from?
Hi, everybody. This is Erica in Illinois. How are you?
Hey, welcome, young lady. Good to hear your voice.
Erica, that's tricky.
What's that, Michelle?
You're tricky. You're in the chat room and calling with your hand up. That's
I know.
A new one for me.
Well, Michael started
double whammy.
Michael started talking about power person, and then was like, I want to talk right now. And then I pushed one like 15 minutes ago. So now I have to do a worksheet from my frustration while waiting.
So if you look at, you know, that dynamic, when you see that your mind serves that up and constructs a reality based in frustration at waiting, how did it look like in your life? What did it look like when you did something that your power person didn't want you to be doing and they had to wait for you to do what they wanted you to do? What energy was in your power person when that would happen?
That's a very interesting question. I never thought about it. I think it was different with the three people that I have called my power person. With my mom,
right.
I would be yelled at very quickly, and I would change courses like within seconds. She did not have to wait.
So did when you were waiting for the opening to complete and for your hand to be answered, was there a part of you that wanted to yell? Yell at the phone, Michael, quit that, stop, get me on the phone.
I did that for probably about 10 seconds, and then I was like, Erica, just breathe. So then I just started breathing.
Good catch. Okay. So notice that's your power person dynamic. I'd write that one down. And then every time your mind wants to go into that, there's your next worksheet. And then if she would switch courses, what dynamic would she go into after she would, you would instantly switch course, and what dynamic would she go into then?
Into, it wasn't love, but it was more loving. It was she was approving of what I was doing now because I was doing what she wanted me to do.
Okay. So now if there's somebody in your field, like for instance, you might be in an intimate relationship and you're in frustration, you want to yell, maybe you do, and that person changes course, do you want to reward them the same way?
Yeah, and I have done that with probably all of my romantic relationships, and they have all failed.
I was just going to say, how's that work for you?
It has not worked.
It'll never play out any better in any other situation or relationship than it played out with your power person from you. It's just never going to work.
Oh, I have so much growing to do.
Well, welcome to the human race. Or should I say, welcome to the non-human race becoming human, functioning out of love. Yeah, you know, I mean, I really admire the work you did at Heartland, the way you were able to listen to your inner dynamics, and then the couple of times you called the show and the breakthroughs that you made. You know, to me, it's absolutely awesome. And, yeah, you know, we're looking at, I don't have my regular phone with me right now, but I always keep the number in there of having multiplied out how many people there are in 30 generations, and it's something in the range of 1,073,842,712 or something like that.
Yeah.
And all of those voices want to prompt us to do behaviors. The voice of our power person has probably been going on in our generations for who knows how long. Sometime when you've got a chance, sit down with your mom and ask her about what her mother would do, that when the stress was up and the chips were down for her mother or her father, what did they do?
Okay.
Say, for instance, when waiting. And I guarantee you that she'll say exactly what you just said and you've described that you've done in your relationships. Because she didn't make it up in one generation. That stuff has been going on for so long. And
right.
So, yeah, there's deep, you know, when they said to Yeshua, well, how many of these damn worksheets do we have to do with seven? And his reply in Aramaic was no, 77 times 70. So, you know, you're going to do an infinite amount of work. But when you realize how that dynamic that you hated, you rely on, until you can dissolve it, how it impacts your life and your relationships, it's, you know, it's tantamount to living in hell. And once you realize it's there to be cleaned up, it's like, you know, what else is there to do? I'm going to do 77 times 70 worksheets. I might be working on this issue still 5 years from now. Why would I want to do that? Because if 5 years from now you make the final breakthrough on it, then that'll be gone from your life and you'll be finished with it. And you'll have opened the space for your whole bloodline to heal that issue. It's pretty powerful.
All right.
Good breath.
Well, since the conversation sort of changed courses, but I still have the same question, and I'll frame it with romantic relationships.
Okay.
So we watched in Dr. Tim's group The Circle of Life and How to Play It. I believe that's the full title.
Yes.
And honestly, I didn't watch everything that people watched because I left to do a worksheet. But at one point in the lecture, you were putting under the loser category victim mentality / hero.
Right.
And
yep.
I got angry. That's not what I did the worksheet on, but it brought up the anger in me. And so I think I try to play the hero. And I want you to talk a little bit on that to clarify it for me. Please.
Okay. Well, the idea there is that the victim and the hero are just opposite sides of the same coin. When one experiences themselves, their internal reality, as playing out of brain cells that hold victimhood, then that victimhood mentality, when we see someone else, let's say, stuck in being the victim, and we want to go fix it for them, we want to go save them from it, rather than support them in learning how to heal themselves, rather than, gee, you know, I've been there, done that, seen that, experienced that, and there's some really powerful tools, let me share them with you. What the hero will want to do is, well, you know, that's just so painful for them, which is just a way of saying, that still resonates so much pain in me that I just want to fix them, and I want to stop them from experiencing that because they experiencing that brings more of that up in me that I haven't resolved yet.
Okay.
So the hero wants to step in and fix it, and it's just a flip coin of the victim. And they want to fix it out of their victimhood. You remember, well, we actually didn't because it, you were with the, at the workshop project, so it wasn't really an intensive. But in the intensive, we'll instruct people. You know, if somebody gets into their pain and trauma, we want you to just be the space of love. And if there's a part of you that wants to jump in and pat their shoulder or, you know, tell them it'll be okay, you can stop now. It's because what they're experiencing is something traumatic in oneself. And it's hard for somebody to watch somebody in a trauma that matches a trauma they have.
Yeah.
For me, I love to watch people in deep pain, trauma, and turmoil. I just love to watch it and be part of it. Because, and some people say, what, are you some kind of a masochist? It's like, no, no. Here's what I know. If I or somebody else in the space is staying connected to the active presence of love, then everything at the root of that trauma and turmoil begins instantly to dissolve. And that person's freed of it. So the deeper a person can go into their trauma in the presence of love, the faster the trauma will be resolved.
Mm-hmm.
And so I just love it. And what you saw in the intensive or in the work week, when things came up, what did I say? Go for it. Okay, breathe. Go in deeper. Let yourself feel it. And every layer that we can let ourselves access, if there's at least one person in the space who's holding to the active presence of love, all those layers just peel off and people are freed of it. And I'm talking about freed of, I've seen people, you know, just freed of some of the most terribly traumatic, hateful, horrible, vicious, ugly things that people can do to each other. And when people carry the energy of that hateful, horrible, ugly, vicious thing, every time it's resonated, they get stuck in that energy.
Right.
Whereas if love is present, it starts to dissolve that energy and the person's freed of it. Absolutely awesome.
I've heard you say
so that's why I'm always... Say again?
I said I've heard you say that many times, and I've heard Dr. Tim say it, and maybe I've heard Jeannie say it as well. But I know, like, as I've been doing my work here, I keep repeating these two lines from the Course in Miracles where, right at the beginning, where it says, this is a required course, only the time you take it is voluntary.
Yes.
And I just keep reminding me of that.
Yep.
Reminding myself. Another question came up while you were talking, though, Michael.
Go for it.
So you talked about, you know, forgiving this. And we have this saying in American English, like, forgive and forget. And I know they're talking about pardoning and stuff, but what's been happening is that I will forget situations even occurred unless I, like, come across the old worksheet or I read something I wrote. And I just, like, forget the event happened. And then when I read, like, the document, I just read it as, like, okay, this happened. But I don't have
the story of somebody else's life I'm reading.
It's almost like that.
Yeah. And that's exactly the point that I'm making, is that literally, you know, it's pretty well agreed in the arena of psychology that somewhere in the range of 90 to 95% of our psychological dynamics are unconscious, or psycho-spiritual dynamics are unconscious.
Right.
And so if somebody opens an area and is in a safe space, and they drop right down to the very root of that, and love is present, the root dissolves. And that's when it just becomes, well, it's nothing to remember. I mean, here's somebody for, you know, 35 years has been hanging on to this trauma with dad or mom, and 30, you know, over and over, relationship after relationships. And then when they actually do the worksheet that collapses the projection, that the pain is about something on the outside, and drop into what's on the inside, and actually have or bring love present, it dissolves and it's done. It's like not even something to be talked about anymore. You know, some people, you know, their whole life story is about that terrible trauma, and they tell it to everybody they meet. And once you drop into that with the presence of love, it's like it never happened. I can remember that it happened, but as you say, it's kind of like some distant thing that happened to somebody else, and, you know, I remember it, but I don't have any connection or attachment because I've dissolved all of the traumatic energy around it.
Okay.
So that's one of the signals that you're right on track and heading in the right direction.
Well, after you just finished this, I feel a lot of fear right now because my mind went to, if I start erasing all of these events, how will I know who I am?
Mm-hmm.
And I started thinking, well, I didn't have a personality anymore, and then I just wouldn't be. Like, that's what my mind did real fast.
Well, that's called, as Dr. Tim calls it, the dark night of the ego.
Well, I feel like always the night. When does the day come?
Yeah. Well, when all the non-being parts of you are forgiven, then who you really are as this absolutely connected, joyful, blissful, ecstatic presence of love is what comes next. The non-being mind will fight against it because it doesn't know that's there. It just says, well, but this is us, and if you get rid of me, what will be left of me?
Right.
Yeshua to that person said, in order for you, being, to live, you've got to die. This non-being self has to die. And it is experienced by many people as a very real death and loss. But the truth is, it's not. It's just stuff.
Okay. Well, I'm going to write that note down to myself so I remember. I just wrote it down.
Cool.
Okay. Thank you so much.
So, have you ever held a newborn?
Yes.
So just any time that fear comes up, oh my God, what will I be? Just remember that's what's going to replace it all.
Okay.
That's what's going to replace it all.
Cool. That's much better.
Yeah, that's awesome. Absolutely awesome.
Well, thank you, Michael.
And besides that, a lot of fun.
What's fun? The process?
No, living as a human being, living as the presence of love, rather than this, you know, ball of emotions that we've identified with that has absolutely nothing to do with the truth of who we are.
Mm-hmm.
But the non-being mind thinks that this ball of emotions, without that, what would I have? What would I be? You'd be love, that's all. You'd be instead of non-be.
Would you be able to relate to people?
Absolutely. And you will have so much empathy and compassion that people will hardly recognize you.
So are you
And in some cases, you know, there'll be a completion point on relationships. I remember there's a woman who, when she was in grade 9, came to Heartland back the first year that we opened, and she had a job and she'd worked and she came to an intensive in grade 9. She'd come into the work in Dayton, Ohio, and when we opened Heartland, we put out an invitation to people who wanted to come and be part of the process and support Heartland, you know, rebuilding and getting ready to operate. She decided she wanted to do that. Her parents were not very happy with me. And I said, well, you know, you need to talk to your daughter. I only put an invitation out to everybody, and she responded, and I can't stop her if she chooses to do that, but you're her parents. You need to stop her. Well, she wasn't interested in being stopped, so she did that.
Mm-hmm.
And she was at Heartland for about 3 years, then left Heartland as a mature student, went to college, actually married the dean of the college, Together, they created a megabuck computer business. Mm-hmm. And it's probably about 10, so this goes back 26 years ago. So she was there for 3 years. And it was probably about 10 years ago she wrote to me. She had lived in Dayton, Ohio, and had not been back home since she'd come to Heartland. You know, had not been back to spend any amount of time. And she shared with me that her letter was a thank you for giving her a life. Not that I could possibly do that, but she had the experience of creating a life. And she said, I had decided to take a vacation and go back home just to see all my old friends. Mm-hmm. And she said, it was like, I moved on with my life. When she came to Heartland, one of the biggest things that sticks in my mind, when she came to Heartland in the ninth grade, she was an inner city kid from Dayton, Ohio. She had never eaten a carrot.
Wow.
Her family meals were McDonald's and Burger King,
mm-hmm.
Coke and M&M's.
Yep.
And so she went back to see her friends and she says, I want to thank you, Michael, for the fact that I have a life. I'm a gourmet vegetarian chef. I grow an organic garden. I grow and prepare most of my own food.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I have a life. And she said, I went back to visit with these kids that I went to school with in grade 9, and I had just kind of presumed that they'd done the same. And she said, they're still back there doing their Coke and M&M's, McDonald's, and smoking pot.
Right.
And she said it was like a major shock for her that these people hadn't created awesome lives for themselves. But we're just, you know, hanging out in the neighborhood, smoking and doping and, you know, drinking and drugging. You know? So yeah, I mean, it's awesome. I actually, you know, my son and my daughter, were conceived in this work and brought up in this work. And it's always been, you know, since they became adults, it's always been, well, you know, that's your stuff, Dad. I'm not involved in that.
Mm-hmm.
But I actually got a rather shocking text from my daughter this past weekend. And she sent me a text saying, Dad, I just want to really thank you for everything you taught me about nutrition. Because she's like been in total rejection of, you know, touch a worksheet, not me. But she sent me a text saying, Dad, I just want to thank you. She's got a 4-year-old daughter, almost 4. She'll be 4 in December. And her former her husband from a former marriage has a daughter that's, I think, 8 or 9 now. And is a Coke and M&M's kid and won't eat food at all, won't eat anything that resembles food, will only mm-hmm. eat the chemical concoctions that kids are being fed in places like McDonald's and such.
Right.
And so she's always guarding her 4-year-old from the tantrums and the insanity of the daughter who eats nothing but chemicals and junk. I mean, will not accept a piece of food if it's put on her plate. It's like, thanks for doing that, and thanks for teaching me how to think in a way that's different from what people have been brainwashed in this country. Like, that's a pretty sweet acknowledgement for my daughter, you know.
Mm-hmm. I'm thinking about how, you know, my family, we ate all that food, too. That was our diet. And
yep.
As I've been, like, slowly changing it, and I live at home right now, and so I'm bringing in, like, all of these new products and making different things. And, you know, they'll try them every once in a while. But it's been a very interesting shift to have to make. And
huge.
One connection I'm making is that I'm hearing often from my my sister and my mother keep asking, like, how much something costs. And I'll tell them, like, you know, it was $8, it was this much, whatever it was. And they repeatedly say that's so expensive. And I'm like, well, my mom grew up in poverty. Most of the homes she lived in were condemned by the city. And she fought people. She dropped out of high school. Like, she was that kid. And so money was scarce in her household. And so everything they bought was of a very low quality, highly processed, not actual food.
Right.
Like, what do we do to support people like that? Because, like, I'm at the place where I don't have to live like that. And my family doesn't
right.
have to live like that right now. But I know lots
right.
of people who are in that position, who feel like they have to
yeah.
live that way.
Well, I think that if you help them to build the brain cells, to educate them to think mm-hmm. differently than the culture's taught them to think. And one of the things is to just put forward the thought of, you know, when I buy food, I'm really not buying food. What I'm buying is nutrition.
Mm.
And when I buy something that's processed, all the nutrients have been removed, and I get a filler so my stomach's full, but I don't want to eat just to fill my stomach. I want to eat to strengthen my bones, to strengthen my lungs, to strengthen my muscles, my structure. And so when people can start to think in terms of, oh, never thought of that. I thought, gee, if I eat a pound of food, I've eaten a pound of food. What's the matter? My belly's full. I say, yeah, but if you don't get any nutrition with that pound of food, does it really benefit you? And if people can start to think in terms of the kind of nutrition, there's an interesting chart you can download it, I believe, at Rutgers University. Rutgers had a traditional program of, standard chemical farming, and they set up to do a project to disprove organic food.
Uh-huh.
And they put out a chart where what they found when they started to try to disprove organic food is organic food has as much as 80 to 90% more nutrients than the stuff grown on chemically fertilized and chemically sprayed farms. 80 to 90%. So if I spend a dollar and a half and I say this is cheap for this pound of food, but I'm only getting a half a unit of nutrition, and I spend $5 and I'm getting 20 units of nutrition, that $5 purchase for the same pound of food was cheaper than the dollar and a half purchase because I bought 20 times as much nutrition for it. Once people can start to think in those terms, then they will tend to think in terms of nutrition that they're getting rather than just filling their bellies. Mm-hmm. And that takes time, you know, for people to be able to get to that space. You know, you've heard me use the example of I bring a dog in the room and the dog has a choice. I have an ounce of gold on a plate and I have a pound of hamburger. And the dog has a choice. You could pick up the ounce of gold, go down to the market and buy 1,500 pounds of hamburger. But what dog is going to do that? Not in the next million years. There isn't a dog that's going to do that. If I could train the dog to understand that the ounce of gold could buy him 1,500 pounds of hamburger, there's no dog in the world that would dare to touch the pound of hamburger. But without the brain cells, they can't make the choice. So as you go back to Yeshua with all of his work, and he says, you got to have the eyes to see and the ears to hear. You got to have the brain cells. And that's what he was talking about. And once they've got the brain cells, then they'll look at the organic food that costs twice as much, and they'll say, yeah, and it's got eight times as much nutrition. So twice as much, eight times as much nutrition, I just saved half my money. I'm going for it. And that kind of change will start to happen. But the other challenge is in this culture, you know, there are two industries, the drug pushers, the drug culture, and the nutrition industry, or the so-called nutrition industry, the food industry. And they spend approximately $50 billion a year between them to tell people what to put in their mouths. Do you think that a drug-pushing industry that has a product to sell, if they can hook somebody on it for life, and it's going to cost them, you know, $500 a month for life for this drug, is going to say, by the way, if you eat no unrefined carbs and you eat whole foods, you can get rid of your diabetes? Do you think they're going to tell them that? Not very likely. In fact, they're going to discourage doctors. I had a stepson back in former marriage that had cancer, and we took him to Shands. His father was very medically oriented and insisted he get surgery.
Mm-hmm.
And we took him in and checked him in and took him to his room. And there was another boy there who had the same surgery that our son was going to have. And the doctor and the parents were celebrating. Now, this is one of the primo children's hospitals in the world.
Yeah.
They were celebrating that this kid who had just come out of surgery the day before had eaten a half a hot dog and drank a Coke. They were celebrating that. And it was just like, this is the deepest malpractice I've ever seen. This doctor should be put in prison. For he has totally and completely taken the drug brainwash and ignored the thousands of research articles that talk about nutrition and cancer. I mean, there's thousands and thousands of research articles and projects that have been done that prove beyond the shadow of a doubt. And yet, that's the culture. $50 billion. Now, that $50 billion a year estimate goes back about 15 years ago, so today it's probably double that. I don't know. Maybe triple. To tell people what to put in their mouths. So educating people and giving them new brain cells, it's a pretty fair challenge. But it can be done. We do it all the time. And, of course, giving people the experience of it. You know, you came and did 10 days of that awesome food, and at Heartland, you know, you never saw anybody open a can. You never saw anybody with a process package. We serve only food. And most people are shocked when they realize that food actually comes from the ground. It doesn't come from a box. It doesn't come from a can. It doesn't come from any of the center aisles in the store. If you want actual food, go to the outside edge, and if you can find something organic, you've got actual food. But it takes time to understand that and put that to work in one's life.
Oh, Michael.
Yeah, I hear you. I hear you. It's an interesting game, you know. We've been doing this for decades with people, and it always comes around to another educational process, another opportunity. And if you find yourself getting frustrated, there's your next worksheet. You know, what I can't hold the space of love for is my work.
Mm. There's lots of it. Well, we covered a lot right now. Now that I'm looking
at it. Yeah, we've covered a lot of territory. Could probably listen to the show two or three times and still be milking it for information.
Mm-hmm.
And we are down to the last few seconds, so I'm going to have to close the show out. So I'll just say thank you. We appreciate your regular calls and the intelligence behind your questions, and the work you're doing is pretty awesome. It's cool.
Thank you so much. Thank you, everyone.
All right, Erica. Blessings. Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Dr. Tim, for jumping in so Jeannie could do the other work she had on her plate before we leave Springfield, and we're on our way heading back to Heartland in just a little while. So have a blessed day. Send us travel blessings as we go, and we'll be in touch. Bring a stranger to the show tomorrow, and create the best year yet of your eternal life. It's such an awesome gift to give the world, to really focus on creating the best year yet of your eternal life. We're here to support you. Blessings.
Thank you for listening to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice, and his wife, Jeannie, who present the internal Aramaic process of forgiveness. Michael and Jeannie are here every Monday through Friday on Earth Angels Radio. For more on Michael and Jeannie, please visit www.whyagain.com. That's www.whyagain.com.